Welcome, everyone, and thanks for listening to Let's Brief It, the podcast made for law students by law students.
I am Fabiola Uela, a student at Georgetown University Law Center.
And I'm Andrew Nettles, a student at GW Law. And in today's episode, we'll be exploring culture and law with Arush Darudi. Arush is a modern general counsel of Fender, who also serves as the president of Fender Play Foundation. Arush has lived and worked in multiple countries and cultures, including the Americas, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, Asia, and also Australia. Welcome to our show. It's great to have you this morning.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. As we are about to talk about law and culture, could you please share a bit about yourself, all the countries you've been to, and how many languages do you speak? And in what ways would you say your culture has shaped your worldview and the way you approach the legal practice?
Yeah, no, happy to do so. So I was born in the United States, and my parents were students in the United States at the time that I was born. We are from the country of Iran. And prior to the revolution in Iran, a lot of students would come from that country to the United States or Europe, receive their education, and then ultimately go back to Iran. And after I was born, revolution occurs. You had two young students who were my parents stuck in the United States with a six-month-old child, which was me. And they didn't have work visas, so they couldn't actually earn a living to support me. And the political situation back home was increasingly becoming more difficult as every day went by. So they made a decision that since I'm a U.S. citizen born in the United States, not only the United States, born in Texas, you know, the heart of the United States, that I could go back and forth to Iran as I pleased with the U.S. passport. So the decision was they would send me to Iran with my grandparents for a period of 6 months. That was the plan. I go to Iran for 6 months while my parents stay in the United States, get their visas, get their job sort of in line and secure a home, and then would summon me back to the United States because I could go back and forth. Well, I go to Iran when I was 6 months old. Shortly thereafter, all-out war breaks loose between Iran and Iraq. And I actually got stuck in Iran for 7 years. And I didn't see my parents again until I was 7 years old. So during that period of time, when back to your original question, how did sort of my global perspective shape me as a person, not only as a lawyer, but as a person and a human being? It was absolutely profound. It shaped everything that is me and everything that describes me as not only a professional, but as a person. So it was not only the war in Iran at the time, which I remember as a child. I remember the bombs. I remember the destruction and all of that. But near the end of the war, around 1987, 88, Iran allowed people to leave the country to go on various tourist visas. And so I took advantage of that with my grandparents to go to 19 different countries in order to make sure we get a passport reinstated for me and also get my grandparents a visa. We went to India, Pakistan, Egypt, Sweden, Germany, Italy, Spain, and the list goes on and on. All of these different countries, by the time that I was 7 years old, I had lived for at least a couple of months in all these countries because we were waiting to get visa status and passports reinstated. Imagine what that does to a seven-year-old kid living in so many different countries, experiencing the different cultures, the different food, mannerisms, the different just way that human beings are in these different cultures. So it absolutely shaped me. And to this day, I speak four languages, would always love to learn more. So at least I can use my children as my platform for them to learn more languages than I know.
It's absolutely incredible. And your experience, especially from this perspective, how do you think learning about diverse cultures beyond what's typically taught in legal textbooks enhances a lawyer's ability to be able to effectively navigate different legal environments, especially the clients from various backgrounds in the entertainment industry?
Absolutely invaluable, completely and utterly invaluable, because no longer is the world sort of disconnected. You know, in prior centuries of human civilization, essentially you had a couple of superpowers and then every other country really was just on its own. Now you have a global interconnected ecosystem. It's an economic ecosystem where the smallest parts manufacturer and supplier in some obscure province in China has a significant implication on a manufacturer in Idaho. This has never been like this in the history of the world. So when you have this sort of interconnected ecosystem on a global scale, the ability to understand and appreciate the fact that people come from different countries, which means they come from different cultures, which means that the way that they go about doing business or negotiating or interacting on a professional level with other folks around the world is different. Not everybody, you know, behaves like the Anglo-American repertoire, if you were. It's different. And like for us, my company, we're the largest musical instruments manufacturer in the world. So for those who don't know, Fender is the most famous and the largest guitar manufacturer in the entire world. We've supplied guitars from Jimi Hendrix to Eric Clapton to Pink Floyd, and the list goes on and on. We were there for Kurt Cobain. We supplied him with his guitar during the Nevermind album and such. But overall, we also understand as a corporation that we import and source so many different components from around the world, whether it's Southeast Asia, whether it's Europe, Middle East, Africa, South America, that you have to truly have a global view and a global vision in order to be successful in today's day and age.
Interesting. I know that you studied at Georgetown. I'm also at Georgetown doing LLM. And I know that LLM is a place where you meet different students from all over the world. What advice would you give on building connections and gaining insights into different cultures?
No, absolutely. I think that the beauty of Georgetown is that it is a very international school. So your classmates, the people that are sitting right next to you, at least during my class, they were from around the world. It was such a beautiful thing to see. Now, for my undergrad, I had gone to University of Maryland. But University of Maryland, amazing school, but we didn't really have that sort of exposure to international students, not as much as I saw at Georgetown. So simply engaging with the kids in your class, you know, having a lunch with them, a coffee with them, a drink with them. Where are you from? What's your story? Tell me about your countries. It is fascinating. I remember folks from Venezuela. I remember folks from Ghana. I remember folks from Nigeria. I remember from Spain. It was just incredible that all these people were in my class. So these are the future leaders of tomorrow in various business or government or sort of nonprofit work and such. So take the opportunity to get to know them, hear their story.
Many lawyers find themselves in roles different from what they had initially anticipated that they would venture into when they were in law school. Was working with the iconic Fender brand something that you had expected when you were a law student? And what advice would you have for attorneys looking to switch gears and transition, let's say, from something like taxation into the field that you're currently in?
Absolutely not. I had no idea that I would end up becoming the general counsel of sort of a rock and roll company and such a pivotal brand and such. No idea. Not even 1%. I mean, my vision was essentially my undergrad, I studied accounting. I got my CPA. And I was going to law school to become a tax attorney. And then I got my LLM in tax and such. So to go from tax attorney to working with this really cool company, it's nothing that I sort of planned. And I think that actually it was nothing that you could plan. And that's the beauty of it. I think that the profession itself, inherent in being a lawyer, is the flexibility of being able to do many different types of things. So you may sort of take some courses in law school that are skewed towards a specific topic. You may go on and get your LLM or even go on after that and get your SJD. But overall, you're still pretty flexible. I mean, the law is the law, and the route that you take could completely change than what you initially expected. My recommendation always for folks entering into the legal realm, especially in today's day and age where technology is moving at a pace that didn't exist when I was in school. Yes, we had the internet. I wasn't going to school during the horse and buggy days. Yes, we had the internet. But the internet, for the most part, was something that was a bit primitive. I mean, there was social media, but that was very, very sort of at its early stages and such. There certainly wasn't artificial intelligence. There certainly wasn't machine learning. There certainly wasn't all these different things that today now exist. You have to be flexible because you have no idea that by the time that you enter into the workforce, whether certain industries are still going to exist or whether new industries may pop up that you never thought possible. So no, I never, ever thought that I would end up at Fender.
Yeah, on that note of technology, would you say it has already had an impact on your day-to-day tasks? And how does it manifest in the music industry?
That's an amazing question. So yes, absolutely. And I'll give you a concrete example. I've been wanting to implement artificial intelligence within our legal function for quite some time. And I couldn't quite identify the area to implement artificial intelligence. Like, for example, there's a lot of companies out there that essentially tout these products that have AI baked into them for contract management. It doesn't really work. You know, they have amazing salespeople and they tout all these different things. But in the end, you still need the attorney to understand the business, review the contract in the context of the business and where the business wants to go, protect the organization and negotiate that contract, right? So I think we still have a ways to go on that front. However, I did hit the jackpot on the use of artificial intelligence with intellectual property enforcement. So in October of 2023, I implemented the very first AI-based IP enforcement tool for Fender. Basically, what it does is that the artificial intelligence system sort of scours the internet, identifies infringement as well as counterfeits based on image recognition. So let me just back up. For my IP people in my department, the way that they identify infringement or counterfeits of these products that are behind me, which are guitars for the folks listening in, for these guitars, is essentially that they identify key visual cues that tell us it's counterfeit. Example, lack of a serial number on the back of the headstock, lack of country of origin, sort of different configurations of the components of the guitar that sort of is a red flag of, wait a minute, this something is off. These are all visual cues. The AI system does that. It is programmed to pick up and identify those visual cues. It not only does that, it does it for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and has yet to complain in the HR office. It is the best employee that I've ever had. Now, we implemented it in October of 2023. To date, it has enforced close to $40 million in goods that it has taken down, which are infringing or enforcement. That's a game changer. So going back to your question, as far as what have we done in embracing technology, particularly AI, IP enforcement, absolutely. And guess what? What's most fascinating is we've only tapped the surface of the capabilities of the system, like the very, very surface. It can get much more granular in the way that it enforces. It's very exciting.
Sounds really exciting. And some people are threatened by it, but it sounds like we can tap into it and make a great difference.
Everybody's always threatened when new technology comes out. Example, when they introduced the very first high-speed train in New York in the early 20th century, I think the speed was 50 miles per hour. They had signs that basically said pregnant women should not get on the train because they were afraid that they would cause irreparable harm to fetuses and such. Anytime you introduce new technology, human beings are first afraid by it. Some people adopt it and realize that it's okay. And then sort of an avalanche effect starts to occur. Now, for you guys coming out from law school, my recommendation is keep a very close eye to how AI shapes not only the legal profession, but how does it shape business and humanity? Because it will dictate what you guys sort of get involved in the future.
Thank you so much. That's a great advice. You shared that you've been to so many countries and you're working with a cool company. So I'm curious to know if there is one human interaction that was really interesting that you could share with us.
Yeah, no, happy to do so. So again, I always say this, we sell our products from Tokyo, Japan, all the way to Santiago, Chile, and everything in between. So in almost every continent we sell, except for Antarctica, we sell our products. We also manufacture across 9 different countries, employ in multiple continents. So we're very much a global company, which I absolutely love that about the role. I love the global aspect. It's always exciting. It's always something new. One example is the fact that our largest manufacturing facility is located in Mexico. And as you can imagine, millions and millions of dollars of goods go over the border from Mexico to the United States for us. We manufacture it, import it into the United States, and then either distribute in the US or it goes abroad to different countries. We ran into an issue. We ran into a legal issue with the government of Mexico. And temporarily, for a period of 30 days, our ability to import product from Mexico was stopped. We couldn't import. For a manufacturer, and a distributor and a retailer of sort of a physical product, consumer goods, that is a catastrophic event. It's basically similar to an artery in your body, a critical artery being clogged. It causes a serious financial issue. So this process has gone on for 30 days. Our board of directors was very concerned, executive management concerned. Everybody was very concerned. There was no solution sort of at hand. We work with the biggest firms you could possibly imagine in Mexico. They were also unsuccessful. They tried. We went to another firm. They tried. The government in Mexico operates very differently than the government in the United States. So it's not the same rules of engagement, if you will. I finally, in one of the executive meetings that we had, the decision was made that we were going to have to eliminate around 300 employees from our Mexico factory. Why? Because this had become a significant financial situation for us. I decided to speak up. So I decided in the midst of all these folks in this room to speak up and say, let me go down to Mexico, give me the opportunity to go down there, and let me see what I can do. Everybody looked at me like, what do you think you can do that the other parties have not been able to do, including the largest law firms on earth who have branches in Mexico? I said, look, we've tried everything, hasn't worked. Let me at least go down there, see what I can do. So I got an Aeromexico flight, flew from California down to Mexico City. I had a car pick me up. I asked the gentleman to take me to two government offices, Profepa and Semarnat. I didn't have an appointment. I didn't call ahead of time. I just said, take me there. So they took me to the government office. I got out, walked into the building, walked up to the security guard, and in my limited Spanish, I said, my name is so-and-so, I'm from the United States, and if I don't talk to somebody today, we're going to eliminate 300 employees from our factory in Mexico. The security guard looked at me like I had horns coming out of my ear. He said, siéntese. In Spanish, it means sit down. So I sat down. I waited for 45 minutes, ever so patiently, just waiting in this lobby, until finally, a lady came down and came up to me quite aggressively and said, who are you? What are you doing here? And again, I told her, I'm so-and-so from this company. If I don't resolve this today, we're going to eliminate 300 people. She says, do you speak Spanish? I said, yes, I speak a little Spanish. So we started talking. And we started talking about where I was staying in Mexico City and the area I was staying. And if I knew about the history of the city, and I said, absolutely, I know the history of the city. I know it was Tenochtitlan from the time of the Aztecs. And we just kind of went on and on. And she was quite impressed that I knew about the culture of the city and the beauty of it and the art and all the different amazing things that come along with it. She invited me into a conference room, brought another gentleman in. That gentleman that was brought into there, you would have never assumed that this one individual controls billions of dollars of goods that go across the border from Mexico to the United States every single day. This one person. He came in, we talked about Mexican history, Mexican music, Mexican everything. Within 45 minutes of me spending time with them, I got the stamps I needed. I called my CEO. I said, the trucks are going to roll over the border. We resolved. Now, in the context of sort of the general theme of this podcast with you guys, why did that work? Why did that work when it didn't work for all those other huge law firms? Because the ability to understand that we are a global company, that when you do business in Mexico, you have to understand Mexico and respect Mexico and understand and respect its culture, number one. Number two, the ability to connect to human beings on a human level. Sending an email is a very inhumane act. The ability to go down and shake somebody's hand and look them in the eye is a very powerful tool that can be harnessed to resolve many business and legal issues. I did that. And number three, people fundamentally like to know who they're working with. They like to put a face to it. Before I went down to Mexico, before I went into that government office, before I shook hands with those two individuals, they simply saw us as some massive US corporation. Now they don't see that. They see me. They know me as the person. That's a prime example of sort of leveraging the ability to delve deep into the different cultures of the world to resolve issues for your organization and be successful.
That's a really powerful story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I also thought that was a great point, especially your last point on how now those officials they don't just see a multi-billion dollar corporation or vendor, they also see you as well. And I think that's really important. And as you discussed, the ways in which you're able to lean on your background in order to facilitate that relationship and that dynamic. It was such a pleasure having you on our podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been an episode of the DC Bar Let's Brief It podcast, a podcast for law students created by law students. Thank you so much to Arash Darudi and to the DC Bar communities for hosting us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for making time. It was a great pleasure having you.
My pleasure, absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
The DC Bar Law Student Community strives to engage and support law students before you graduate and expose you to the tangible benefits of joining the DC Bar and DC Bar communities. Curated programming allows law students to participate in leadership trainings, substantive content programming, networking with practicing attorneys in fields of interest, writing opportunities, and other activities designed to expand your legal education beyond the classroom. Make an investment in your legal career by joining the law student community. To learn more, visit us at www.dcbar.org or email communities@dcbar.org.